the HoloNet to broadcast propaganda shadow feeds, providing separatist accounts of battle wins and disinformation about Republic war crimes, and in the end, spreading apprehension among the populations of the core worlds that a separatist victory was imminent. It was, however, separatist success in jamming Republic communication relays that had brought Tarkin into play. Together with operatives of the Republic's fledgling cryptanalysis department and elements of the 12th Army, Tarkin had been sent to Mercana both to spearhead the invasion and to oversee the dismantling of the Shadow Feed operation. Running his hands now over S-thread jammers, signal eradicators, and HoloNet chafing devices, he recalled being among the first wave of clone trooper platoons to fight their way into the building that was the source of the shadow feeds. Then, on overpowering the separatist forces, torturing the captive scientists into revealing the secrets of their jamming and steganographic technology, and putting to death thousands of beings who had contributed to Dooku's scheme. The mission had constituted the first of Tarkin's covert operations undertaken for then-Supreme Chancellor Palpatine. Mercana had kicked off a year of similar successes, though it had ended in Tarkin's capture, torture, and incarceration in Citadel prison. With the Emperor's proclamation of the New Order, some aspects of the HoloNet had come under strict Imperial control, as much to provide the military with exclusive communications networks as to censor unauthorized news feeds. Tarkin was completing his initial survey of the components when Vader sought him out.
"The sliding doors were engineered to trigger a blast when opened fully," he said. "Odd that the remote failed to register the explosives."
Tarkin gestured to the stacks of devices. Whoever assembled this array found a way to blind the remotes. Vader looked around.
"Imperial Securities operative made no mention of a rigged entrance."
Tarkin pinched his lower lip. That could mean that the explosives were only recently installed.
"With the building under constant surveillance?"
"The street entrances, yes," Tarkin said. "Probably not the roof." Vader absorbed that in silence, then said,
"Puzzling, even so. All this merely to lure and murder an investigative team."
"I doubt that the door trap was meant for us, Lord Vader."
"Intruders of a more ordinary sort. Would-be thieves. Black marketeers."
Vader gazed about him in what struck Tarkin as mounting vexation.
"Have you found any unfamiliar devices?"
"Not yet," Tarkin said.
"Then it is all too obvious. These devices were deliberately placed where they could be discovered. This is a stage set."
"Perhaps," Tarkin said. "But we're going to need to investigate every container to be certain there's nothing new among the devices. This cache may date from the war, but that doesn't negate that the components appear to be fully functional and capable of interrupting or corrupting HoloNet signals." Vader was dismissive.
"Technology that has been available for nearly a decade, Governor."
"The question is, why are these devices here?"
"Someone found them elsewhere and moved them here for safekeeping until their value could be determined."
"That would explain the rigged doors," Tarkin said. "But it's also possible that whoever originally found the cache made use of some of the components to engineer the false distress call transmitted to Sentinel Base." Vader fell silent for a long moment, then said,
"I agree. Your proposal, then?"
Tarkin glanced around. "We can everything, and record and transmit to Coruscant any serial numbers or markings we find. Any suspect components should be relocated to the Carrion Spike, and also returned to Coruscant for further analysis. The rest should be destroyed." Vader nodded in agreement. Tarkin glanced around again and sighed with purpose. "We have our work cut out for us."
"The stormtroopers can see to most of it,"
Vader said.
"There is someone I wish to speak with before we return to the core."
Tarkin showed him a questioning look.
the Imperial Security Bureau asset who first reported the find.
Chapter 11. Fair Game. As the gunship sped back toward the center of the city, Tarkin, gazing on the devastation, thought, "This might have been Iriadu had he not warned the planetary leadership that supporting Dooku would have meant inviting cataclysm." Not every member of the planet's ruling body had agreed with him, but in the end he'd gotten his way and Iriadu had remained loyal to the Republic. For Tarkin, though, the stewardship of his homeworld had come to an end. When word of his decision not to seek re-election became known, his aging and by then ailing father had summoned him to the family compound for a frank conversation.
"Politics hasn't been enough of a battleground for you?"
his father had asked from the bed to which he was confined, his body punctured by feeding tubes and shunts. The view out the large window took in nearly all of the calm bay.
"More than enough," Tarkin said from a chair beside the bed. "But the immigration issues are solved. The economy is back on track, and our world is now thought of as a core world in the Outer Rim."
The adjoining room of the master suite had been transformed into a kind of intensive care unit, with a Bacta tank and a team of medical droids standing by in the event the Elder Tarkin should desire resuscitation.
"Granted," his father said. "That, however, does not mean that your work is done. A lot of people worked very hard to get you in office."
"I've done what I set out to accomplish and paid them back in full," Tarkin said more harshly than he intended. "Some more than they even deserve." He fell silent for a moment, then added, "I'm exasperated by having to appease so many separate interests and fight to have laws passed and enacted. Politics is worse than a theater of war." His father snorted.
"This from someone who has always preached the importance of law and rule by fear."
"That hasn't changed, but it has to be on my terms. What's more, Iriadu's internal problems scarcely matter in the present scheme of things. When I met last with Dooku, he made it sound as though galactic war is both inevitable and imminent."
"And why wouldn't he? In his determination to persuade you to throw in with his separatists, he would make use of enticement, threats, whatever it takes."
Tarkin thought back through his recent conversation with the Count and shook his head. "There was something else on his mind, but I couldn't pry it from him. It was almost as if he was offering me an opportunity to join some secret fraternity of beings who are actually responsible for this mess." His father seemed to consider it.
"What will you do, then? Wait for the Republic to instate a military and enlist?"
He shook his head in disgust.
"You served in Outland. You served in the Judicial Department. Enlistment would be a backward step just when Iriadu needs you most, especially if this schism leads to war. Who will be able to keep Iriadu safe should it fall to Dooku's forces?"
"That's precisely the point. There's only so much one can do with words and arguments."
"So, you'll race to the light of the lasers. Wasn't that what you used to exclaim as an Outland commander?"
His father managed a rueful laugh.
"You may as well adopt it as a personal motto."
"Death or renown, father. I am, after all, your son."
"So you are,"
his father said, slowly nodding his head.
"Has the Supreme Chancellor remarked on your decision?"
Tarkin nodded. "Palpatine is in my corner, as it were."
"I was afraid of that."
His father regarded him for a long moment.
"I urge you to think back to the carrion, Wilhuff. When a pride's territory is threatened, the dominant beast stands its ground. It doesn't run off to enlist in a larger cause. You must think of Iriadu itself as the plateau."
Tarkin stared out the window and then turned to face his father. "Jova told me a story that bears on my decision. Long before you were born, long before even Jova was born, A group of developers had designs on the Carrion and all those resource-rich lands the Tarkin family had amassed. Our ancestors initially attempted to resolve the matter peacefully. They attempted to placate the developers with credits. At one point, as Jova tells it, they were even prepared to offer the developers all the lands north of the Orineswa River, clear to Mount Veermok. But their offer was rejected in the strongest terms. For the developers, it was either the entire plateau and all the surrounding territory, or none at all. His father smiled weakly.
"I know how this story ended."
Tarkin smiled back at him.
The Tarkins understood that they weren't going to keep their adversaries at bay by posting no trespassing signs or encircling the Carrion with plasma fences. Given all evidence that they were prepared to capitulate, they lured the leadership of the conglomerate to the bargaining table. "And assassinated them to a man,"
his father said.
"To a man. And that was the end of it."
His father took a deep breath and loosed a stuttering exhale.
"I understand. But you're naive to think that the Republic has the guts to do that with Dooku and the rest. Mark my words, this war will drag on and on until every world pays a price. And I'm glad I won't be around to see that happen."
The ambassador to Morkana was waiting at the top of the ornate stairway that fronted the principal building of the Imperial compound. A tall, broad-shouldered woman, she was dressed appropriately for Morkana, Tarkin thought, in that she was sporting stormtrooper armor. Seemingly unable to decide whether to salute or bow as he and Vader approached, she simply spread her arms in a welcoming gesture and adopted a cynical smile. Morkana's acid rain and soupy air had taken a toll on her hair and complexion, but she appeared otherwise healthy.
"Welcome, Lord Vader and Governor Tarkin. I was aware that Coruscant was sending an investigative team, but I had no idea—"
"Has the operative arrived?"
Vader interrupted. She gestured to the residents with a flick of her head.
"Inside. I summoned him as soon as I received your comm."
"Show us to him."
She spun on her boot heels and made for the reinforced front door, two stormtroopers flanking the entrance, stepping aside and saluting Vader and Tarkin as they passed. The entry hall and main room of the residence were sparsely furnished, and the dry air was artificially scented. A Korriban male, taller than Tarkin, and draped in tattered robes, stood silently behind a curved couch. His cranial horn was of average size for his species, but his facial ridges were marred by intersecting scars. The ambassador gestured for Vader and Tarkin to sit, but they declined.
"May I at least offer you something to—"
"Tell me, ambassador,"
Vader interrupted again.
"Do you ever leave this compound of yours, with its high sensor-studded walls and company of armed sentries?"
"Of course."
"Then no doubt you have seen the obscene scrawlings and defacements displayed on every other building between here and this planet's wretched excuse for a spaceport."
She showed him a sardonic look.
"My lord, as quickly as I have them expunged, new ones spring up. And what of the criminal rabble that cluster on every corner?"
Tarkin asked.
She laughed shortly. "They proliferate even more quickly than the defacements, Governor Tarkin. The moment Black Sun moved out, the Crimora moved in."
"The Crimora,"
Vader said.
"Actually a local affiliate known as the Sugi."
Vader seemed to tuck the information away.
"You need to make an example of them," Tarkin said. The ambassador looked at him as if he'd lost his mind. "You think I haven't tried?"
Tarkin cocked an eyebrow.
"Meaning what, exactly?"
She started to reply, then blew out her breath and began again.
"I've made appeal after appeal to Moff Thurbon for additional stormtroopers to no avail.
And if we see to it that you have additional resources, you'll do what must be done?"
she continued to regard Tarkin with skepticism.
"Excuse me, Governor, but I don't think you understand the situation fully. Officiating here has been like serving a sentence for a crime I didn't commit. The stormtroopers have a saying, 'Better spaced than based on Belderone,' and we're a far cry from Belderone."
She blew out her breath.
"Yes, I can leave this compound, but my life is at risk whenever I do. Hence the white wardrobe."
She glanced between Tarkin and Vader.
"Maybe you two haven't noticed, but Murkana isn't Coruscant. The population here hates me. I sometimes think Murkana hates me. I'm held responsible for every Imperial tax increase and every minor change to the legal system. The smugglers are the only ones who garner respect because they're the only ones providing goods, even if at exorbitant rates. As for the crime lords, they're the only ones powerful enough to provide protection from the thieves and murderers this planet has bred since the war ended."
Vader took a step in her direction.
"I will be sure to let the Emperor know of your dissatisfaction, Ambassador."
She didn't retreat.
"I sure as hell wish someone would. I mean, I'm humbled that the Emperor deemed me worthy to serve him, but this assignment..."
Vader thrust his forefinger at her.
"Allowing a cell of dissidents to operate under your watch is not what I would call serving the Emperor, Ambassador."
"Dissidents?"
She shook her head in genuine bewilderment.
"I don't understand."
Instead of explaining, Vader turned his attention to the Korovar.
"You are the intelligence asset."
"I am Brachia,"
the Korovar said in little more than a whisper. Tarkin knew that it was nothing more than a code name, but it was the only name Deputy Director Harris Eisen had been willing to provide.
"You were a Republic operative during the war."
Brachia nodded.
"I was, Governor Tarkin. I assisted in your anti-shadow feed operation here."
Tarkin adopted a thin-lipped expression of wariness.
"Tell us about the Corporate Alliance building, the former med center."
The Korovar nodded in deference.
"Before entering, I watched the building every day for a week, Governor Tarkin. When I determined it to be unoccupied, I entered and made a quick inventory of the devices as directed."
"As directed?" Tarkin asked in surprise. But before Brachia could respond, Vader said,
"You entered how?"
The Korovar turned to him.
"Through sliding doors, Lord Vader. I'm not aware of any other entrance, and the devices were just where I was told I would find them."
"How could you fail to notice the turbo lift?"
Vader said. The Korovar looked at the floor.
"My apologies, Lord Vader. I was fixated on investigating the devices."
Tarkin placed himself deliberately between Brachia and Vader.
"Are you saying that you didn't make the discovery on your own?"
"No, Governor, I did not. I was merely tasked with verifying a report sent to me from Coruscant."
Tarkin's brow furrowed.
"From Imperial Security?"
Brachia nodded.
"From my case officer at ISB, yes."
Tarkin had his mouth open to pursue the matter when his comlink sounded and he prized the device from its belt pouch.
"We're at the building, Governor Tarkin."
Tarkin recognized the voice of Sergeant Crest.
"At what building?"
"Back at the Corporate Alliance building, sir."
"You're not at the landing field?"
Crest took a moment to reply.
"Sir, you told us to return here after we'd offloaded the devices at the Corvette."
"Who told you?"
"You, sir."
Crest sounded as confused as Tarkin.
"I sent no such orders, Sergeant."
"Excuse me, sir, but the order came by holotransmission from you just after we'd transferred the last of the devices you marked for the ship. Without the gunship, we had to commandeer an airspeeder at the landing field."
"Who is with the ship?"
Vader stepped in to say toward the comlink's audio pickup.
"Two of our group, Lord Vader, in addition to the Corvette's captain and comm officer."
Tarkin felt blood rush from his face.
"Sergeant, return to the ship immediately."
"On our way, sir."
Vader looked at Tarkin while he was contacting the Carrion Spike's captain.
a second feature from the makers of the false holovid transmitted to the moon base.
In which I am now the principal actor, Tarkin said, trying not to sound too rattled. Checking the comlink again, he added, I can't raise the ship.
That happens all the time, Governor Tarkin, the ambassador said. If it's not the city's power grid, it's the communications array.
He glanced at her with his mouth open, an uneasy feeling beginning to coil in his chest. Fingers dancing over the comlink's keypad, he opened a second channel that allowed him to communicate with the corvette itself and enter the code that commanded the carrion spike's slave system to prevent anyone from so much as approaching the ship. But the system didn't respond.
Nothing, he said to Vader.
Not from the command cabin? Not from the ship itself? Vader whirled on the ambassador.
Contact Coruscant by Holonet immediately.
She spread her hands in apology.
Lord Vader, Morkana hasn't had Holonet communications since early in the Clone Wars.
She cut her eyes to Tarkin.
The Holonet was destroyed during the First Republic assault.
Tarkin recalled. The relay had been destroyed as a means of disrupting Dooku's shadow feats to worlds along the Perlemian trade route. His thoughts reeled.
Send a subspace transmission, Vader was saying.
Governor Tarkin,
Crest said from the comlink.
We're back at the landing field.
He fell silent for a long moment, and when he spoke again, his voice betrayed astonishment.
Sir, the carrion spike is nowhere in sight.
Tarkin stared at the comlink.
What?
It's not here, sir. It must have launched.
Impossible,
Tarkin said.
Where are your troopers, Sergeant?
Vader all but snarled. Again, the reply was long in arriving.
Lord Vader, we have a visual on four bodies. Two stormtroopers, the captain, and the comm officer.
Crest paused, then added,
Shot through and through, Lord Vader.
Vader clenched his right hand.
You failed me for the last time, Sergeant.
I get that, sir,
Crest said in a somber voice. Vader turned to Tarkin.
We sidestepped the smaller trap only to fall into the larger one, Governor. If nothing else, we now know the reason we were lured here.
Bringing his left hand to the brow of his helmet, he paced away from Tarkin and the ambassador, then swung back to them.
The ship is still in the Morkana system.
Tarkin didn't waste time asking how Vader knew that to be the case. Instead, he glanced at one of the stormtroopers.
The judicial cruiser at the landing field.
The stormtrooper shook his head in a mournful way.
Not spaceworthy, sir. We've been waiting on replacement parts for the hyperdrive motivator for 3 months local.
I know where to procure a ship,
Vader said abruptly. He swept his arm in a gesture aimed at the stormtroopers.
All of you, come with me.
Then he turned and pointed to Brachia.
And you.
Tarkin fell in among them as they hastened from the ambassador's residence. Tarkin had his doubts. At Lola Seyu, when Skywalker, Kenobi, and Ahsoka Tano had participated in rescuing him from the Citadel, Tarkin had taken issue with the Jedi strategy of splitting into two teams. Surrendering group integrity for twice the number of potential problems made little sense, and that was precisely the way the mission had unfolded. Tarkin's general, Evan Peel, had been killed, and the rest of them had nearly fallen back into the clutches of the Citadel's sadistic separatist prison warden. Now, all these years later, Vader had split their forces, and here they were, allowing themselves to be herded at blaster point into the den of a Sugi crime lord, while the stormtroopers were elsewhere in Morkana City, carrying out their part of Vader's plan. So Tarkin had his doubts. But with the carrion spike apparently in the hands of shipjackers, and his captain, comm officer, and two stormtroopers dead, he had little choice but to go along with the subterfuge, in the hope that it would succeed.
I still don't like splitting up the team, he said to Vader as one of the Sugi was shoving him from behind.
Vader glanced over at him. But as ever, it was impossible to tell what was going on behind the black orbs and muzzle of his mask. The headquarters building was in better condition than most in Mercana City, its graceful swirls of coral and undersea colors having either survived the war or been restored since. Initially, Tarkin had taken the Sugi for an insectile species, but in fact they were short bipeds who affected armored power suits. The suits provided them with a second set of legs and a segmented, barb-tipped abdomen, which gave them the appearance of mythological creatures. The soldiers, at any rate. Others in the dank hall Vader and Tarkin were escorted into stood on their own 2 feet and wore cowl-like helmets with power packs of some sort on their backs. The outsized helmets made their large-eyed, skeletal faces seem even smaller than they were. 20 soldiers complemented the half-dozen who were holding weapons on Vader and Tarkin, with several repurposed separatist battle droids augmenting the hall group. Their apparent leader lounged on a gaudy throne of coral, clicking orders to his minions. Vader came to a halt 5 meters from the throne and spent a moment taking in the overstated surroundings.
"You have done well for yourself since the demise of your former competitor, Crime Lord,"
he said at last. "And for that I owe you a debt of gratitude, Lord Vader," the Sugi answered in heavily accented Basic. "That is the sole reason I have allowed you entry to my abode, to thank you personally for killing my predecessor and persuading Black Sun to abandon Mercana for safer realms."
"You are as insolent as he was, Crime Lord."
"Given that I enjoy the upper hand here, Lord Vader, I can well afford to be." Vader folded his arms across his massive chest.
"Don't be too sure of yourself."
The Sugi dismissed the warning. "I have been apprised by my associates of your prowess, Lord Vader, but I doubt that even you could triumph over so many." When Vader said nothing, he continued. "Now, what is this drivel about commandeering my starship?" Tarkin stepped forward to speak. "We take your meaning about being outnumbered, but perhaps there's a healthier way to persuade you to do as Lord Vader asks." The Sugi's large eyes expanded.
"I have not had the pleasure."
"Meet Moff Tarkin, Crime Lord," Vader said. "Sector Governor of Greater Seswena and more."
The Sugi sat back in his chair. "Now I am impressed that Mercana should play host to 2 such luminary Imperials. Though many might say I would be doing the galaxy a favor by eliminating you here and now." He fixed his gaze on Tarkin. "But you are saying, Governor Tarkin, that in meetings of this nature there are always alternatives to using brute force." "I can't imagine any alternatives that will convince me to surrender my fanged beauty of a starship, Governor Tarkin." Cautiously, Tarkin drew a portable hollow projector disc from the pocket of his tunic. "If I may..." The Sugi waved permission.
"Sergeant Crest," Vader said toward the device, "are you in the Crime Lord's warehouse?"
"Yes, Lord Vader. Ready to bring the entire place down on your command."
"Then you have redeemed yourself, Sergeant."
"Thank you, Lord Vader."
The Crime Lord's expression approximated entertainment.
"You can't be serious. Or do you actually believe that I would surrender my ship for a warehouse full of weapons?"
"Your Crimora associates on Coruscant might encourage you to do just that."
"I'll take my chances, Lord Vader."
"You're right, of course," Tarkin said quickly. "But just now your warehouse contains more than weapons. We've arranged for your wives and brood to be present as well." He called up an image of the Sugi's family members huddled in a circle on the warehouse floor and surrounded by stormtroopers with raised weapons. "We understand that you are very attached to them. A product of your genetics, I suspect."
"You wouldn't,"
the Sugi said. His earlier doubts about Vader's plan beginning to fade, Tarkin lifted an arrogant eyebrow.
"Wouldn't we?"
The Sugi fidgeted in apprehension.
I can have both of you killed where you stand.
We'll take our chances, Tarkin said, grinning slightly. Your ship, for their lives. After a long moment of rapid clicking and nervous hand-wringing, the Sugi broke the tense silence.
All right, take the ship. I will purchase a replacement. I will purchase 20 replacements, just let them live. Let them live!
Tarkin's face grew deadly serious. You'll need to furnish us with all the necessary launch codes and order all of your underlings to leave the landing field at once.
Then I will do it, the crime lord said. Whatever you ask.
Vader leaned slightly in the direction of the comlink.
Sergeant Crest, transport the crime lord's family to the landing field and let me know when your troops are in possession of his ship.
Let them live,
the Sugi repeated, rising halfway out of his throne in supplication. Take heart, Tarkin said. They most certainly will survive you.
Chapter 12. Burying the Lead.
Outbound from Mokana, the Carrion Spike's new pilot and three members of the new crew were gathered in the command cabin, marveling at the wonders of the ship. The shipjackers, a human, a Mon Calamari, a Gotal, and a Korovar, some standing, others seated in the chairs that fronted the curved instrument console, could hardly keep still, having pulled off an act of piracy that had been close to 2 years in the planning. The human, Teller, was a rangy, middle-aged man with thick, dark hair and eyebrows to match. His long face was perpetually shadowed with stubble, and his chin bore a deep cleft. Dressed in cargo pants, boots, and a thermal shirt, he stood between the principal acceleration chairs, watching as the Gotal pilot and the Korovar operations specialist familiarized themselves with the ship's complex controls. The bulkhead left of the forward viewports bore traces of carbon scoring and blood from the brief blaster fight that erupted when the shipjackers had had to burn and battle their way through the command cabin hatch to deal with Tarkin's defiant captain and comm officer.
Getting the hang of it?
Teller asked the Gotal, Salik. The twin-horned, flat-faced humanoid nodded without taking his heavy-lidded scarlet eyes from the instrument array.
She flies herself, he said in accented basic.
A native of the moon Antar IV, he was short and dark-skinned, with tufts of light hair on his cheeks and chin. He wore an old-fashioned but serviceable flight suit that left the clawed digits of his sensitive hands exposed.
It will fly itself, but we're going to tell it where to go,
Dr. Artos told him. The Mon Cal wore a flight suit whose neck had been altered to accommodate the amphibious humanoid's high-domed, salmon-colored head, and whose sleeves ended mid-forearm to allow passage for his large webbed hands. Facing the length of the instrument's console, Artos was pointing out individual controls, his huge eyes swiveling independently of each other, to focus simultaneously on Salik and the ops specialist, Kala. Teller had known all three of them for years, but what with Salik's sweaty scent and the saline smell Artos emitted, he was grateful for the spaciousness of the Carrion Spike's command cabin. Then again, from what he'd been told by his non-human friends, humans weren't exactly a picnic when it came to body odor.
Computer-assisted fire control for the lateral lasers and in-close weapons,
Artos was saying, indicating one set of instruments after the next.
Full authority Navicop. Stealth system initiator. Sublight ions. Hyperdrive.
State-of-the-art Imperial technology,
Kala said. Jutting from a headcloth that fell past the Korovar's shoulders, his spiraling cranial horn was twice the height of Salik's conical projections, and thicker than both of them combined. He wore pouch-pocketed pants, not unlike Teller's, under a roomy tunic that reached his thick thighs.
This corvette will easily exceed a Star Destroyer.
Nothing less than what I promised,
Arto said, though without a hint of self-importance. He gestured to the auxiliary controls.
Sensor suite. Rectenna controls. Alluvial dampers. Reverse triggering acceleration compensator.
Which one empties the toilets?
a second human asked, as she stepped through the scarred cockpit hatch. Fit and scrappy-looking, she had a narrow frame and skin the color of a tropical hardwood. Her short, curly hair was naturally black, but had been lightened to a mishmash of brown and blonde. She wore a white utility suit and ankle-length ship-tread boots. The Zygerian female who followed her into the command cabin was also slender, though somewhat taller, and distinctly feline in appearance. Pointed, fur-covered ears sprang straight up from the sides of a narrow-nosed, triangular face. Her innate exoticism was enhanced by reddish coloring. Teller turned to them. "Everything locked down back there." The woman, Honora, nodded. "The outer hatch is fully sealed. The airlock, not so much." She gestured with her pointed chin to the Zygerian. "Hask's going to keep working on it, since it was her blaster that did the damage." Hask snorted. "When she slammed into me..." She spoke basic, flawlessly, but with a thick accent. Honora showed her a long, suffering look. "You were supposed to keep the safety on."
"For the last time," she said. "I'm not a soldier, and I'll never be one."
"Plenty of blame to go around," Tella said, cutting them off. "The holocam survive?"
Enthusiasm informed Hask's nod. Her head bore a symmetrical pattern of small spurs.
"They're in the main cabin. I'll get started slaving them to the holonet comboard."
"As soon as she's repaired the airlock," Honora said, blue-gray eyes bright over her smile. Hask ignored her.
"Nice of Tarkin's stormtroopers to carry some of the storeroom components aboard. I thought we were going to have to sacrifice them."
"We have Tarkin to thank for a lot of things," Teller said. He swung forward in time to catch the end of Artos's instrument rundown.
"Airlock overrides, blast tinting for the viewports. What else?"
"Do all the Emperor's moths rate one of these?" Honora asked, running a hand over the console in appreciation.
"Only Tarkin," Artos said. "As far as we know."
"A testament to his friendship with Sinar," Teller said.
"Sinar Fleet Systems wasn't the only contributor," Artos amended. "The company's design sense is all over the Corvette, but every shipbuilder from Theed Engineering to Cygnus Spaceworks played a part in outfitting it."
"Not to mention Tarkin himself," Teller said. "The Moth was designing ships for Iriadu's Outland Security Force when he was 19.
Hask made a sour face.
"More Pref Belt Academy legends."
Honora shook her head negatively. "True, by all accounts." Teller perched on the arm of one of the secondary acceleration chairs.
"The way I heard it, Iriadu was losing a lot of its lomite shipments to a pirate group that had fortified the bow of one of their ships to use as a rostrum, a kind of battering ram, after destroying too much cargo with their lasers."
"The pirates weren't acquainted with ion cannons," Selleck said, from the pilot's seat.
Teller glanced at the Gotel.
"Says Wenna's ships were too well ray-shielded for that. Another Tarkin innovation, I might add. Anyway, he designed a narrow-profile ship with cannons that could swivel on pintles to direct all firepower forward. Confronted the rammer bow-on."
"Damn the particle beams! Full speed ahead!"
Hask said, still refusing to buy into the legend. Teller nodded. "Burned through the pirate's armor like a knife through butter, and blew the ship apart." He turned to point to toggles on the control console. "Same system here." Kala grinned.
"Should come in handy."
"We can hope,"
Otto said, giving the console a final appraisal with his right eye, while his left remained fixed on Salik.
"Proximity alarms, hypercom unit, Imperial holonet encryptor."
"Why is it called the Carrion Spike?"
Honora said. Teller drew his lips in and shook his head.
"Not a clue."
Everyone fell silent for a moment, gazing through the viewports at the Morkana system's small outermost planet and the vast starfield beyond.
"I still can't get over Vader being there,"
Hask said finally.
"I mean, why would the Emperor send him to escort Tarkin? Vader paid Morgana a visit just after the war ended,
Carla said.
Executed a Black Sun Twi'lek racketeer, among other acts.
Still,
Hask said.
Vader.
Stop calling him by name, Honora said harshly, then softened her tone to add,
He's a machine.
A terrorist.
She looked at Teller.
You took a real risk having him and Tarkin walk right into that sliding door ambush.
Teller shrugged it off.
We had to make the scenario ring true. Besides, their getting themselves blown up wouldn't have affected our plans one way or another.
The Emperor wouldn't have been happy losing two of his top henchmen,
Kala pointed out. He's not going to be happy either way, Teller said. The console issued a loud tone, and Carla lifted his eyes to the display.
Teller, we've got a starship on our tail.
Teller's dark eyebrows quirked together.
Can't be. You certain you have the stealth system enabled?
The Korovar nodded.
Status indicators say so. We should be invisible to scanners.
Everyone crowded around the sensor suite.
Put the ship on screen, Teller said.
Carla's stubby-fingered hands raced across the keypad, and a black ship with forward fangs resolved on the display.
Waiting for a transponder signature.
Don't bother, Salik said.
That's Farza's ship, the Parsec Predator.
Teller nodded.
The Sugi arms dealer.
Morgana's most wanted,
Salik said. Carla ran his gaze over the sensor indicators.
Matching our every move.
Teller stared at the screen and scratched his head in bafflement. I'm willing to entertain explanations. Arto spoke first.
Perhaps this Sugi is simply heading for the same jump point we are.
Teller nodded to Salik.
Put this thing through some maneuvers and let's see what happens.
The corvette changed vectors, slewing to port, then to starboard, before rocketing through an abrupt, twisting climb that delivered them swiftly to the dark side of the impact-cratered planet. Everyone fell silent again, waiting for the Korovar's update.
The Predator's still with us, just emerging from the transitor.
Carla swiveled to Teller.
And here's something strange. We're not being scanned.
Teller and Arto's look perplexed.
You stated that it is matching our every maneuver,
the Mon Cal said.
It is,
Carla emphasized.
And I repeat, we're not being scanned. No sensor lock. No indication that we're being observed.
Teller traded glances with Arto's.
A homing beacon?
He suggested. The Mon Cal's confusion didn't abate. Teller looked at Hask.
It was your job to check for trackers.
I did,
the Zygerian all but snarled.
There weren't any.
Or you didn't find any, Teller said.
Why would this Farza attach a locator to Tarkin's ship?
Honora said.
Or is that just a Sugi thing to do?
Offhand, I can't imagine a reason,
Arto said.
But we can certainly outrace the Predator if we have to.
Teller considered it.
That doesn't make me feel a whole lot better, Doc. Not if we've got a faulty stealth system.
Teller, we are not being scanned.
Carla repeated.
The stealth system is operating impeccably. Check the status displays for yourself if you don't trust me.
Teller made a placating gesture.
Of course I trust you. I just don't get it.
Should we contact our ally?
Salik said.
No, not yet, Teller said. We'll be updated soon enough, in any case.
Unless,
Hask began. Honora aimed a faint smile at the Zygerian.
I'll bet I know what you're going to say, and yes, that occurred to me too.
Teller and the others looked at the two of them.
What am I missing?
Teller asked.
Vader,
Hask said, exhaling.
Vader and Tarkin.
Teller continued to regard them.
What? The Sugi is giving them a ride?
Honora rocked her head from side to side.
Or they appropriated his ship.
They could have.
Teller plucked at his lower lip. Still, it doesn't make sense, though. Not if we're invisible to the Predator's sensors. Or are you saying that Tarkin's got some secret way of locking onto us? Kalos spoke to it.
We disabled the slave circuit when we silenced the stormtroopers' comlinks and the ship's comm.
Maybe Tarkin is a telepath, along with being a ship designer, Selleck said.
Vader!
Hask rasped.
Vader!
Tella locked eyes with her. Vader has a way of neutralizing stealth technology. Hask spread her slim, furry hands.
Who knows what's inside that helmet of his? Besides, what other explanation is there?
We should have launched sooner,
Kala said.
We'd be out of the system by now.
Tella shot him a gimlet look. A couple of jumps from here. I'm gonna remind you that you said that. He glanced at Selleck. How soon until we can go to light speed? Lagothal studied the navicomputer display.
As soon as you give the word.
Tella took a breath and let it out. Let's see them try to track us through hyperspace. Is this ship fast enough to close the distance? Darth Vader pulled the yoke toward him.
It is faster than most, Governor, but unfortunately not as fast as yours. We need to disable the Corvette before it can elude us.
Tarkin despaired. As disturbingly well-armed as the late Crime Lord's ship was, disabling the carrion spike was easier said than done. If the ship was, in some sense, a measure of his standing in the Imperial hegemony, then his vaunted reputation just might go down with her. They were at the edge of the Mercana system, the eponymous world well behind them, already a memory and a bitter one. He and Vader were sharing the controls, Vader wedged into an acceleration chair made for a much smaller being, Tarkin strapped into the co-pilot's chair. Crest and the other stormtroopers were amidships, manning the ship's quad laser cannons. Never having shared a cockpit with Vader, Tarkin was astonished by the Dark Lord's piloting skills, though perhaps he shouldn't have been. The sound of Vader's slow, rhythmic breathing overwhelmed the cockpit as he indicated an area dead ahead and slightly to port.
There!
Tarkin saw nothing but star-studded blackness. Nor did the ship's instruments register the carrion spike, which was obviously running in stealth mode. He couldn't imagine how Vader was managing to track the ship, but was for the moment content to be mystified. "Why are they still in the system?" he said. "They can't have shipjacked it for a joyride." Vader glanced at him across a center console.
"They were convinced we couldn't follow them. They are merely taking time to familiarize themselves with the instruments."
Then they must know that we're tracking them.
Indeed they do.
Tarkin found himself actually warming to Vader, especially after what had happened in the Sugi's headquarters. No sooner had word arrived that Sergeant Crest and his stormtroopers were in possession of the Parsec Predator and the codes necessary to launch her than Vader exacted his revenge on the Crime Lord for having been kept waiting. Tarkin knew merely by the gasping sounds that began to erupt from the Sugi that Vader was performing that thumb and forefinger dark magic of his to crush the Crime Lord's windpipe. By then, too, the Ambassador's stormtroopers had rushed into the headquarters, unleashing flash grenades and blaster bolts that had caught the Sugi's underlings by surprise. At one point, Vader had asked them whether they actually wanted to die for their leader, and it was when they replied with weapons that Vader drew his crimson-bladed lightsaber from beneath his cape. Tarkin had witnessed numerous Jedi wield lightsabers during the Clone Wars, but he had never seen anyone put an energy blade to such determined purpose or achieve such rapid and lethal results. Two stormtroopers had died in the exchange, but all the Sugi had paid with their lives. Vader's blade had even reduced the repurposed battle droids to useless parts. "The Ambassador owes you a big favor," Tarkin had told Vader at the time. Now he said, "Surely we weren't lured all the way to Mercana just so the carrion spike could be shipjacked."
"And why not?"
Vader said.
"Stealth, firepower, alacrity.
He paused as if he were about to ask a follow-up question, but said nothing further.
Granted, it's one of a kind, but what is their plan? To strip and sell it for parts? To have it dissected and replicated?
Tarkin heard the words tumbling from his mouth in a rush and got control of himself.
A flotilla of carrion spikes,
Vader said, clearly dubious.
Tarkin gestured in dismissal. Not without the help of the top engineering conglomerates in the galaxy. More to the point, whoever they are, they now have the Corvette as well as a capital ship.
You are convinced that the piracy was carried out by the same beings who attacked Sentinel?
I am. Anyone with skill enough to create counterfeit holovids of ships and beings and to interrupt Imperial holonet signals would also have the skill to wrap the carrion spike in a mantle of silence, disabling not only the ship's slave system, but also her various communication systems, including comlinks and helmet radios. He paused briefly.
Vice Admirals Rancid and Screed were correct about the cache being part of a more far-reaching plan.
If the cache was merely the lure, then the plot is still unfolding.
Then tell me how to disable your ship, Governor.
Tarkin firmed his lips. There is a weakness. If the thieves can be persuaded to lower the shields, concentrated fire on the spine, where the main fuselage meets the aft flare, should do the trick. We were never able to resolve the problem of properly safeguarding the hyperdrive generator while the power plant is supplying the ion drives, the deflector shields, and the weapons. It's not so much a design flaw as an accommodation to the ship's size in relation to her armament. Even Sinar Fleet was at a loss.
I will bear that in mind,
Vader said, though mostly to himself. Frankly, Lord Vader, I'm more concerned about what the carrion spike's weapons can do to us while we're attempting to line up what has to be a very precise laser blast.
Leave that to me, Governor.
Do I have a choice? Abruptly, Vader poured on all speed, accelerating away from the system's outmost planet and taking the Crime Lord's ship into the starry space he had indicated earlier. But then, only to loose a guttural sound of anger and frustration.
They've jumped to light speed.
Tarkin ground his teeth. The situation was growing worse by the moment. In star systems lacking nearby hyperspace relay stations, a ship's pilot had to navigate by beacon or buoy, unless the ship was equipped with a sophisticated navicomputer of the sort the carrion spike boasted, which could plot jumps well beyond the next beacon, all the way to the core, if necessary. According to the Predator's inferior device, the Mercana system had no fewer than a dozen jump egresses, and most of those were into other Outer Rim systems, where beacons were still more plentiful than hyperspace relay stations. Vader broke his protracted silence to say,
They have jumped, but not far.
He stretched out his left hand to enter data into the ship's navicomputer. Tarkin was nonplussed. Then it dawned on him. Vader wasn't tracking the ship. He was tracking the mysterious black sphere he had transferred to the carrion spike. Even so, his optimism was short-lived, undermined by a memory of something Jova used to say when they had turned the tables on a predator, making it the hunted rather than the hunter.
Think first when you're in pursuit. Is your prey trying to escape? Or is it going for reinforcements? Is it perhaps looking for a temporary hiding place from which to spring at you, or still driven by hunger? Has it decided to search out a more vulnerable target?
Chapter 13. Soft Targets.
Darth Sidious was annoyed about having been disturbed from his meditations at the shrine. By the time he ascended to the pinnacle of the palace spire to meet with Mos Amida, he was ready to take someone's head off.
Must I attend to every trivial matter, Vizier?
I apologize, my lord, but I believe you will want to attend to this one.
Sidious eyed him for a moment.
Mercana,
he said in arrant disgust. The Shagrian bowed his horned head in acknowledgement.
Just so, my lord.
Sidious took to his tall-backed chair, while Amida readied the table's holoprojector, then moved to stand silently by the window wall. In the hologram that emerged, several members of military intelligence and the Imperial Security Bureau were grouped before a positioning grid in one of the ISB's situation rooms.
My Lord Emperor,
Harris Eisen of ISB began.
I'm sorry.
Reserve your apologies for when they are most needed, Deputy Director,
Sidious said.
Of course, my lord.
Eisen swallowed hard and found his voice.
We thought it prudent to appraise you of recent developments on Mercana.
I am well aware that Lord Vader and Governor Tarkin found and investigated the cache of communications devices.
Of course, my lord,
Eisen said.
But we have since received a subspace transmission from Lord Vader and Governor Tarkin informing us that the Carrion Spike has been seized.
Sidious sat straighter in the chair.
Seized?
Yes, my lord. From a landing field on Mercana, by unknown parties.
Sidious used the chair's armrest controls to mute the audiovisual feeds and swiveled to Amida.
Why have I heard nothing of this from Lord Vader?
Without the Carrion Spike, neither Lord Vader nor Governor Tarkin has access to the Imperial Holonet or other suitably encrypted communications devices. The first subspace message originated from the Ambassador's residence in Mercana City. The second was sent from a starship in the Mercana system.
Lord Vader has procured a replacement ship.
Yes, my lord.
Sidious re-enabled the holofeeds to the situation room.
Proceed with your report, Deputy Director.
Eisen bowed his head once more.
Lord Vader and Governor Tarkin have commandeered the starship of a local crime lord and are in pursuit of the Carrion Spike. In their most recent transmission, they stated that they were jumping the commandeered ship to the field system, coreward of Mercana, though still far removed from the Palenian trade route.
Do we have a military presence in that system?
Vice Admiral Rancid stepped forward to address it.
No, my lord, we don't. We do, however, have a presence in the Belderone system, which is nearby. My lord, if I may interrupt briefly,
Eisen said. Sidious motioned with his right hand.
My lord, most of the star systems in that region of the Tyon cluster lack hyperspace relay stations, given the likelihood that the ship Lord Vader commandeered has only a standard navicomputer. He and Governor Tarkin will be forced to navigate buoy to buoy.
Your point?
Only that we face a hopeless task in trying to establish a rendezvous while the pursuit is in progress.
Sidious swiveled the chair slightly. Vice Admiral Rancid?
Military intelligence is even now calculating and prioritizing possible jump and egress points in those local systems, and on into the Nilgard sector. Ships can be dispatched accordingly, my lord.
Sidious muted the feed once more, steepled his fingers and brought them to his lips. During his meditations, he had tried without success to trace a snaking current of the dark side to its source. What had it been trying to communicate to him? No doubt Vader was tracking the Carrion Spike by focusing his attention on his meditation chamber. But why had he not sensed a disruption in the force when Tarkin's ship had been taken? In the private transmission he had sent from Mercana, he had dismissed the communications cache as inconsequential, nothing more than misplaced hardware left over from the war. So did his inattention owe to a lingering sense of frustration about the mission? Perhaps he was at odds with Tarkin, or had he allowed himself to step willingly into the trap, as Sidious had encouraged him to do?
Tell me, Deputy Director Eisen,
he said, when the audio feed was re-established.
Do you suspect any link between the communications devices and the theft of Governor Tarkin's ship?
My lord, we are investigating the recorded evidence and serial numbers in an effort to ascertain the identities of those who gathered the components. At the moment, however, we have no leads. There has to be some link, my lord,
Rancid said.
Those now in possession of the Carrion Spike had to have sliced into the ship's security systems and are likely the same assailants who launched the attack on Governor Tarkin's base. That means they have now added one of the Navy's most sophisticated ships to their arsenal of warship and droid fighters.
Harris Eisen was shaking his head.
There's no proof of that.
We don't have enough information to establish a solid connection.
Sidious took a moment to consider the options, then said,
Vice Admiral Rancid, instruct your analysts to continue their calculations.